This is a speaker meeting. So tonight, Lily will speak for 10 minutes and then turn the meeting over to our main speaker, Adam, who will share his experience, strength, and hope for approximately 40 minutes. So I'd like to turn the meeting now over to Lily. You need to wear this awesome microphone.
Headset.
You can just keep that on your collar somewhere.
Anybody's been to Chips and Cake, this is more awkward than the red ringer. Okay. Just do this. Okay. Hi, I'm Lily. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lily.
Hi.
This is my first time ever speaking, so be gentle with me. Let's see. I've got like 6.5 months sober. Just been a joyride. My sobriety date is July 27th, 2015. So, what to say? I guess I'll just stick to what it was like before and then getting sober and then now, I guess. So, I'm originally from Florida. It's a crazy place. All the things you hear are true. let's see. So, my biological mom is an alcoholic. She is an active, thriving alcoholic. But she didn't raise me, so that was good. She has a twin. Her twin passed away at 27 from this disease. So anyway, yeah, they didn't raise me. The parents that did raise me, it's some other members of my family. Pretty normal childhood. It was good. Everything was good. I have an older sister. neither of my parents really drank. They were great. Lots of love in the house. Lots of I love yous. We definitely never went without, but we weren't spoiled. For as far back as I can remember, I feel like I can identify with acting out alcoholically. There's a book called The Willful Child. I was one of those. I still am. I was really hyperactive, really obsessive, rambunctious, all that stuff. I'm trying to think, like, how long I should time myself. What else? I don't know. I was crazy. It's crazy as hell. pretty like normal childhood. My parents got divorced when I was like 9 or 10. Dad got remarried. I lived with my mom and my sister. Everything was like pretty good still. I think I identify with like alcoholic/addict, pretty much like anything that is like pleasurable or like takes me out of myself, I like to do in like mass quantities. I think my first one being TV, I would just like watch hours and hours and hours of TV. Fast forward to eighth grade, my mom passed away of cancer. Or maybe like reverse to like right after my parents got divorced, that was when Alice passed away. So it was like parents got divorced, Alice died, mom dies. That was pretty hard. And then my older sister is 4 years older than me. So I was 14, she was 18. And she graduated high school and she came out here. She booked it, she left. I went to go live with my dad, my stepmom, and my two stepsisters. I was pretty depressed. The next thing that I remember doing that was like obsessive and like to take me out of myself, I used to cut when I was like, I don't know, like 14. That was like, I don't know, for like a year, kind of short-lived. My aunt knew, my sister knew. My aunt was like, I'm going to tell your dad. I was like, no. So I stopped. Then I picked up food. Food was really great. I really loved food, all the time. And did that to the max. Then well, let's fast forward some more. Graduate high school, barely. All throughout school, with the parent-teacher conferences, they'd say, she's so bright, be so great if she would just apply herself. So, yeah, I didn't apply myself. I remember pretty early on at, like, one of the meetings when I still wasn't, I was like, I don't know, I'm just here hanging out. Somebody was sharing, and they said, yeah, I'm an alcoholic. I like to quit everything. I was like, oh, my God, me too. That's so crazy. So graduated high school, in love with food. I was drinking, smoking pot. Eating lots of food. I guess I could rewind again. There's going to be a lot of jumping around, rewinding, fast-forwarding. So my first drink, I was, like, I guess the first thing I tried was pot, and I was 13. And I have really black and white thinking. And I remember doing DARE, rewind again, fifth grade, and you go through the DARE program. I think they have that out here. And I was like, oh, my God, drugs are so evil, like crack kills. And my parents were really, like, relaxed. I remember my dad joking me. He's like, you know what DARE really stands for? Drugs are real expensive. And I was like, oh, my God, that's not fun. So, yeah, drugs are real expensive. They are. I could drain bank accounts. So, and my sister is smoking pot, and I was like, oh, my God, that's crazy. And then I was, you want to get high? Yeah, sure. So we got high. I didn't really like it. I don't even think I really got that high. And then, so anyway, fast forward, ninth grade. Sister's in town. Her and her friends can pick me up. It's my birthday. We go to the beach. And you can drive on the beach there, and we're smoking. And I like lose my mind, kind of. That was crazy. And then, only 5 more minutes. I should fast forward. So, yeah, then some more, like, drinking in ninth grade. Then fast forward 10th grade. It was homecoming. Just got super wasted on, what was it? I don't know. I guess it doesn't really matter. So then, yeah, graduated high school. There's more, like, drinking and smoking pot a lot. I remember talking to somebody I was dating at the time and him commenting on, like, oh, wow, you really like to drink. And I was like, yeah, I mean, that's the goal, drink to get drunk. And I remember him talking about, like, oh, I just like to have a couple and then just relax. And I was like, that's fucking weird, I guess. To each his own. I was like, that's not how I like to drink. That's not how I really like to do anything. The song, like, Take It to the Limit One More Time, that was, like, my theme song, Take It to the Limit One More Time every time. So, yeah, doing lots of that, moved out. I was enrolled in college. I was enrolled. I didn't go. I was enrolled. And I had moved out. I was living in a townhouse in Daytona. That was crazy. And by that time, I weighed about, like, 235 pounds. I was eating quite a lot. Then I went to live in South Florida with my aunt and uncle because they were going to save me. And they did. Now I'm this size. And there was a lot of, we just say, geographics. I was like, oh, I just like to move. It's fun. Everybody else is like going to college and getting married and have kids. And I don't want to do either one of those things. So I'm going to move a lot. So yeah, I was enrolled in school, did pretty good. Lost some weight. My dad was sick, moved back to my dad's house, lived there for 6 months, and I enrolled in that school again. And I was like, I'm going to blow this popsicle stand. So sold my car, moved here the first time, lived here for 3 months, and I was like, I don't want to ride my bike to work at Trader Joe's. Fuck that. And I sold all my stuff to move here, everything I owned, to live here for 3 months. I drink a lot of $2 bottle of wines from Trader Joe's. Never less, because you don't have to pay for tax when you work there. So then I moved to Texas. I was a bartender. I had a little dive bar. That was crazy. It was really crazy. I was enrolled in school again, so that was like college four. And lived there for like 2.5 years. It was fucked up. You know, it's always fun till it's not fun anymore. So I didn't want to move back to Florida. That was an option. So I was like, I'm going to move back here. But I left there, went to Florida for like a month because my dad was sick and dying and I wanted to stay with him. And then I moved here. So that was like 2013. Dad passed away a month after I got here. And I pretty much just like, I don't know. I went pretty crazy. I don't know if it was worse because I was closer to him or because it was parent number two. But, yeah, I drank a lot. There was a little bit of a time where I was kind of like, I don't know, too sad to drink. Yeah. I'm trying to think what else. Anyway, lots of, it was crazy. Then, I don't know, a whole lot of will going on and stuff. I got a job, got a car, did all this stuff. Everyone in my family's super proud of me because they're like, oh, you got a career and you didn't go to school. We're proud. We're worried. I was worried too. Then, yeah, it was kind of like more money, more alcohol. I didn't really dibble and dabble too much stuff. I just really liked booze. What else? Had a, just, I don't know, a bunch of crazy times, had a crazy relationship, and then my sister always recommends books to me. I never read them, but this one was something like about like how to grow up. I love self-help books. I love reading like the beginning half of them. So, so in this book, she's talking about how to grow up, and I'm like, I really need to do that. I'm really fucked up and sad. And around this time, it was a suggestion from my doctor to stop drinking for some health stuff I had going on. I was like, fuck that. Because I remember crying to my sister, I want to, if I stop drinking, I want to stop drinking because I want to stop drinking, not because I'm being forced to stop drinking. Couldn't stop reading this book. And in this book, she's talking about doing all this stuff and how she was all messed up before and then she wasn't. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. Like, she's a hard ass and she's like sober. That's crazy. I had a friend who used to not drink. So I hit up that friend and said, hey, didn't you used to like not drink? Didn't you used to do that, right? And we talked and blah, blah, whatever. And she was like, hey, can I give your number to so-and-so? And I was like, yeah, why? She goes to that or she's going to take me because you don't want to take me or what's the deal? And I had met this friend previously. And I thought the only reason she wasn't going with us to the bar is because she just ran like 6 miles. And I was like, I mean, if you don't want to go to the bar in gym clothes, whatever. You really deserve a beer. You just ran so far. So I was like, yeah, sure. And then I found out this friend is in it, whatever. She took me to a meeting, started getting sober. It was crazy. If you feel like you're going crazy, you're losing your mind, you're probably right. I was just psychotic. I was like, this is some real weird new type of punishment I'm doing to myself. And I swore to her, I was like, I'm really losing it. She was my sponsor. Then I was like, oh, I got this, actually. Like, I'm cool. You're 5 meetings a week is a little excessive, and I'm excessive, so I know you're really being excessive. So tried things out for myself for like 4 days, and I remember her saying, stop and smoke if you feel like you want to drink. And so sure as shit, it was like midnight, and I was enraged about something, I don't know. And I punched a telephone pole and really messed my hand up. It's still kind of messed up. Texted her, and I said, hey, you're right, I was wrong. So we started actively working the steps. And I'm on step 9. Step 4 is, I mean, they, I don't know, they all feel really hard when you're on them. And let's see. She was just really kind to me. Everybody was really kind to me, even when I was like, wanted to just say fuck you to everybody. And I don't know, this wasn't really me, this wasn't my will. I don't want to make this into like a God share, but if it was my choice, this wouldn't have been my choice. But my choice doesn't go so well. It hasn't really gone so well. Since I was like a little kid, you asked me if I was like, I don't want to do that. What do you want to do? Like, I don't know. Like, I never really want to do anything. So, yeah, it was total and complete surrender, basically. I was really used to doing everything for myself, by myself, all the time, really. But I've really learned a lot about myself. I haven't relapsed. I don't want to relapse. The first 10 days were like so excruciatingly painful that I don't ever want to do that again. I have one more minute. So this has been the hardest and best thing I've ever done for myself or tried to do for myself. So yeah, if you're struggling and you feel like you're dying a worse death now than when you were drinking, you're probably doing it right. I'd say get a sponsor, and there's suggestions, which is helpful. They're not demands, which would make them impossible. But do the suggestions and try to not feel bad for yourself if you can, and reach out and try to take yourself outside of yourself to see if you can help somebody else, because that surprisingly helps you. It's just kind of like a little cheat, which is nice. Yeah, that was it. I hope some of it was like helpful or relatable. I went to a meeting earlier today. I try to have a pretty good program. I meet with my sponsor every week. I go to meetings almost every day now. And tomorrow on the daily reflections thing, it was a daily reflections meeting I went to. Tomorrow, the last line, it says, did you take the time to help your blessing, to share your blessings with somebody? So, I don't know. I just really liked that, and that's what I wanted to do.
Yep.
Yes.
Good. All right. Adam, I'm an alcoholic.
Adam.
I was hoping because of Valentine's Day dances, this would be really empty. Let's see. I'm excited. I've done the 10-minute here twice over the past few years. So when they asked me to do the 10-minute again, I was like, really? but now I'm just fucking nervous. So let's see. My sobriety date is June 26th, 2011. And I have 4.5 years. And that's like baffling to me because I couldn't stay sober for like an hour or like half an hour. I mean, I couldn't and I didn't want to. So to think like that the days stacked up to months and stacked up to years now is just like, it's just insane to me. And I absolutely love AA, and I like doing service. I like working with guys, meeting my sponsor, because the life that AA has given me is so much better. I mean, it's like infinitely better than the one that I had before. That like if I'm trying to date a normie and they're like, you gotta go to another meeting, I'm like, no, I get to go to a meeting today. Like, you don't understand. If I stop going to those, you're gonna want nothing to do with me. So, let's see. Welcome, San Carlos. I'm from San Mateo. And yeah, I grew up in the peninsula. I was raised, my mom and dad split up when I was 8 months old. My mom is a lesbian. She's been with the same woman since I was one. And my dad speed dated until I was 13. And so like a very interesting Jewish lesbian household upbringing. And yeah, when I was like 4 years old, my mom came in the kitchen and she kneeled down eye level with me, and she said that She said, I'm sorry, I need to tell you something. Your uncle, who I was, as close as a four-year-old can be with someone, he died today. I didn't understand then what suicide was, but he had been struggling with drug addiction since he was 12, 13, and he was 24, and he didn't want to do AA or NA or any A, and he didn't want to go back to psych ward, so he got high and stood in front of a train. And that, there's lots of drug addicts and alcoholics in my family. It's not out of the norm or unexpected. And only a few have made it into AA, have been lucky enough that it stuck. So, yeah, when I was growing up, I was just terrible in school. Awful. I had all these things like dyslexia and reading and writing disability, and they told me I was colorblind with mouse color, and at eight I had glasses and braces and curly hair. I was just not doing that great. I felt really different than all the kids. Having two moms wasn't weird until I went to school, and then it was strange, my brother getting kicked out of Cub Scouts because of his gay moms, and just stuff like this when I was growing up. So that, mixed with all the other things that they told me were wrong, I really was I was ready to get drunk. As a kid, I was very uneasy all the time. And I just felt dumb. Teachers would tell me negative things. My dad would get in fights with teachers because they would say terrible shit to him about my performance in school. And I just grew up until I got sober. I just literally thought these are the cards I was dealt. I'm not that smart of a guy. And but it was just they weren't teaching me in a way that I could learn. I figured that out later. But anyways, so when I was nine, I was at a Passover dinner, and I figured out if you finish your Manischewitz wine, they just fill it back up. And I just kept drinking it, and pretty soon I got up to go to the bathroom, and my face was just bright, flustered red, and I was kind of stumbling along, and it felt good, and that's the first time I remember really purposely, taking something. After that, I started stealing alcohol from my dad's liquor cabinet. I would get a cup this big, fill half up with vodka and half up with orange juice, and have a friend sleeping over, and my friend would take a sip or two. I'd drink the cup and just be wasted. We'd play computer games and stuff. Pretty exciting. And the only things I was really good at when I was young was riding dirt bikes and doing martial arts. And those were my saving graces. And then I started smoking weed when I was 12. So I would say I don't count just a little bit of drinking before that. I would say really my drinking and drugging career was from 12 to 22, so 10 years. And I just immediately was just getting high all the time. I immediately started selling weed at school. I also immediately got expelled from school for selling weed. So I've never had any luck at not getting in trouble. I've always gotten in trouble for everything so many times. So I got in trouble a few times, and then, I was pretty much flunking out of high school. I was working construction, drinking a 30-pack every day. I would carry Pedialyte in my truck because I got the most gnarly hangovers all the time. Never didn't get hungover. So I would just have Pedialyte. Not the only one that tastes good is called fruit, berry, terrible. Apple is like make you want to throw up, but fruit is great. So if you're not done, there you go. So yeah, I just like I would be like pounding Pedialyte on my way to work and like smoking weed at lunch and like trying to do framing and stuff. It was just a fucking mess. And I went to this continuation school where we basically were like paid. Like I had like a one-on-one teacher, so I got a diploma in like a month. It cost a couple grand. Like that's how I graduated high school. And and then, let's see, I had planned to go into the Marine Corps when I turned 18. So I was just gonna drink and work construction until then. I'd gone through a lot of phases, and in this phase of my life, I was like driving a bunch of like pickup trucks and listening to terrible country music and stuff and camping all the time. And but I was like I was a shitty person. There's good people in that life, but I was not one of them. And so what happened? I was doing this like pre-training thing where you go and it's called a pulley program. You just like run a couple miles once a week, do some pull-ups, wear a Marine Corps shirt. It's pretty much just to like lock you in as a kid, you know, to like if you're thinking about it, you're definitely gonna do it. Well, at this point I was like 16. I already had like a really nice street bike. Super sexy bike. And there was this girl who was home on recruiter duty. She was like 26, 10 years senior to me, and she rode street bikes, so she immediately noticed me. I didn't know that she was married or anything like that. And, so after we were training one day, she got her helmet out of her car. She's like, you know, take me for a ride. Sure. And so me and this girl started dating, and she was like really motivated for the Marine Corps. Like, we call it moto. She was just like, man, I had planned to go into the Marine Corps to be a diesel mechanic. And she's like, no, like you want to be a ground pounder, you want to be in the fucking infantry, like you don't want to do that, you could get out and be a mechanic and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah, yes, I agree. And then after I switched my MOS, she's like, I turned 17, and then she's like, you know, I really can't be dating a civilian. Like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, you can get emancipated right now and go, because they take, if you're emancipated in 17, you can join. So, that's what I did. I got emancipated. I mean, I had nothing going for me, okay? It was like going nowhere in construction, you know? I have friends that are extremely successful in it, but it's just not my thing. And so now, yeah, I'm like the youngest person there in boot camp. I was doing great, kicking ass, and because I had done martial arts my whole life since I was like 5, and I had grown up hunting, so I was a really good shot and really good at fighting. Which is, you know, there's not much more you need than that. And by the time I got out of boot camp, and oh, I found out she was married while I was in boot camp. Her husband was like threatening me. I was such a stubborn asshole. I mean, now I would have been like, I am so sorry. I had no idea. But then I'm like, come at me, bro. Because I knew he just had like a paper pushing job in the Marine Corps. So I was like, bring it on. That's like my character then. So I was in MOS. I was in infantry school, and they looked at all of our files. There was like 500 of us. They picked out 60 that were eligible to try out for recon. Which, it's kind of like the Navy SEALs, but in the Marine Corps. So we go do this like 24-hour endurance test of swimming and running and pull-ups and shooting and swimming and running and pull-ups and shooting and like over and over and over just for 24 hours. It was so ridiculous. Like army crawling through a freezing creek and all this crap. It was just like ridiculous. So anyway, 6 of us made it. And then, so when I got out of MOS school, I went straight to recon to start training, which was lucky because the group that I was with in the infantry school went straight to deployment, and I went straight to this, so I missed that deployment. And then my mom's wife, who has been in my life since I was one, she got really sick with breast cancer. Like, really sick. They were like, there's a very low, I mean, we're going to do everything we can, chemo, radiation, surgeries, remove both breasts, lymph nodes removed, like, but it's not looking good. And I was a wreck. Like, I was a mess. I remember, like, being on live fire shooting ranges, not the kind where you're just stationary shooting, but, like, the kind where you're advancing like this. So there's just bullets flying everywhere, and I'm just bawling. Like, I mean, silently, you know, because as a Marine, but just, like, silently crying, running ranges, firing, and I'm like, this is so dumb. So I put in for emergency leave, and this is a while back. This was like 2006. There was no gay marriage, you know? There was no gay nothing rights for then. Like, it was hard for my mom's wife to just get rights to, like, make a decision in the hospital when I was a kid back then, you know? So when I went and said, hey, I brought all this stack of paperwork, like, they had a civil union in Vermont, they got married in Canada, like, everything you could do back then. And I was like, you know, she's pretty much gonna die. I would really like to be there. I want to take 5 days of emergency leave so that I can be there to take her into her first surgery and be there when she gets out. And my, lieutenant looked me dead in the eyes and said, you know, this is the federal government. We don't recognize any state law. To us, that woman is no one to you, Marine. Go back and train. And I was like, fuck you. I was not having that. And so I went UA. I left when I wasn't supposed to. I went home to take her into surgery. I remember telling this story when I had like a year and a half, and it was kind of like a heroic story. But that, then I was sharing one time, I was the speaker sharing the story, and I was like halfway through it, and it just dawned on me, like, I was wasted. Like, I went home, just barely browned out, you know, not blacked out, but just right there, like taking her, going to the hospital, just wasted when she came out of the hospital. But I didn't have tools like I have today. And that's the only tool I had to deal with those emotions at the time, you know? So I guess I was doing the best I could, but it was funny to, like, hear these words come out of my mouth. And then the longer I stayed sober, I realized, like, oh, yeah, no, I was messed up that whole time. So I went back to the Marine Corps after that. I got in tons of trouble. I started getting in tons of fights. Everybody was, like, giving me shit because now everybody knew about my gay moms. It was, like, a public thing. I was just getting, like, fist fights all the time. And anyways, at about a year and a half, I was, like, done with it. I said what I needed to say, and I was waiting to get out. And I was drinking. I was trying to go to AA a little bit. There was a midnight meeting up in LA, which is about an hour from base. And I was trying to make it to that. But I wasn't doing anything else but going to meetings, which in my experience, keeping a seat warm does not keep me sober. I have to do the work in AA to stay sober. And so, it was just like all Marines waiting to get out was the barracks I was in. So it's just like 400 fuck-up Marines all together. Partying. And so just like one, I don't know, I've like this story, I've told this story so many times, but whatever, it's my story. There was one room, it was like all people smoking weed and making rap, and the next room would be people like taking ecstasy and raving, and the next room would be people like smoking meth with prostitutes. It was just like crazy. You just walk down the hallway, anything you want, it was right there. And so I got out of the Marine Corps. I had no plan for life. I was really, really cocky. Like, just like, I was just kind of out of my mind. And Then I went to jail as an adult for the first time. I had just been drinking and selling weed, and I got in a high-speed chase, the only one I ever got caught for, in a pickup truck. And my truck overheated, so it's not really fair. I just went to jail for like a month, no big deal. I got out. I started doing Molly, like MDMA, every day, all day, every day. Like, at that point, I became like the kind of drinker and user where I just wanted to be messed up all day, every day. I had no other motivation. I had nothing else going on. I just wanted to be obliterated. Like, if I was sober, I felt so uneasy and uncomfortable inside my body. And the moment I would put anything inside my body, just this ease would come over me. So yeah, I had some really ratchet friends at the time. We started doing like strong arm robbery, armed robbery, terrible stuff. Stuff that I've got to make like the most interesting amends for. And like powerful amends. And anyways, it was just like terrible. I was just hurting people and never was sober, like not for a breath. I would just wake up and like just put like a ton of drugs in my morning orange juice, and that was just like to start the day. And so I found myself in like this old crappy Mercedes that I had crashed, and I stepped out into mud, so my shoes were like covered in mud, and really close by was this Macy's. So I went into the Macy's with the intention of buying some new shoes. Mind you, I've been up for like 2.5 days on MDMA. I'm still continually taking a ton of drugs, and I don't know why. At some point, I decided I was going to steal the shoes. So I'm like running out of there, and the loss prevention's chasing after me, and all right, and I'm just like screaming over my shoulder like, I used to be a Marine, you don't want to do this. But they didn't listen, so we got in a big fight, and at the end of it, like, the shoes are off of my feet, my backpack's off, they're all hurt, I'm like, my heart's about to pop out of my chest, it's beating so hard, but they're all like off of me, so now I'm like running, and I know there's a creek coming up, and so I run, and I jump, but I didn't know how far down it was, and I didn't make it the first jump or the second jump to the water, but there was lots of rose bushes and broken glass and stuff, so I'm just like cut everywhere. It was gnarly. And then I finally made it to the water, and now I'm like, sweet, I just swimming down this creek. Long story short, the real police came and I went to jail. And for that, I got steamrolled. I got like 13 felonies and a strike. And I got out of jail that time. And I couldn't stay sober. I tried. And I thought, basically, I had a strike, and I had felonies, and I had this mounting, now I got introduced to meth, so I had this mounting meth habit that was just getting bigger and bigger, but I was just like, I didn't know how to support it, so I thought it'd be a good idea to start stripping, and I started stripping. And stripping quickly turned into making porn, and that was like immediately into prostitution. And like, I could tell you when I am sober, like my sexual preference is women. And when I'm strung out on meth, I sleep with men for drugs. And like, I would love to not have that on a podcast, you know? Like, that would be awesome. But like, honestly, like, that is my experience when I am not in AA, when I'm not working steps, like, that's where I go. And like that, man, that was some of like the grittiest, nastiest, most disgusting people that I was around. I mean, it was terrible, and my life was just going downhill so fast. And I wound up back in jail for like 9 months with 5 new felonies. And I mean, my life was just messed up, just ruined. And I went to this rehab after that. I talked about all my deepest, darkest shit. Got out of this rehab. I got a job, a street bike, an AA girlfriend. I was going to meetings. Like, everything was cool. And, like, a week later, I got high. And I just, like, I just couldn't understand. Because, like, all the things I always said, like, if I just have all these things, I don't have to get high anymore. Like, I had them. And I was still getting high. And so I went, and my brother called me. He said, come over. And he's been sober for years at this point, and his girlfriend's been sober for a few years. So I went over to talk to them, and she's like 5'9", tiny little lady, and her story is so horrific, you know, the trauma that this woman has lived through. I've never heard a story like it, ever. So when she's telling me, like, I kind of have to respect what she's saying. I can't be like, you don't know where I've been, or you don't understand the things that I've done or the places that I've been, right? Because she's been in a lot worse places with a lot worse people. So she sits me down. She says, I heard you start using again. And I said, look, I'm really happy that AA works for you, like that you go to meetings and you work steps. You have this nice little AA life, you know. But I've tried it. I've tried it for years, and I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me. And she started laughing at me. And she got really serious, and she looked me in the eye, and she said, look, you are not your motorcycles. You are not the girls you sleep with. Like, you don't know who the fuck you are. You have never done service. You have never done a fourth step. Like, you don't have the right to tell me that AA doesn't work for you. Actually, don't ever look me in the eyes and tell me that AA doesn't work for you, because you've never fucking done it. And I was so upset and angry, because she was right, that I decided, all right, I'm going to get sober right now, this minute, at 5 minutes, and work the steps as fast as I can, and then go out and use, so I could say, fuck you, I did it, and it didn't, you know? And so that conversation was 4.5 years ago. I was really in a hurry to get back to using, so I went through my first round of steps so fast. I had a sponsee. I had like 95 days I had my first sponsee, and by like 6 months I had got through my first set of steps. And I didn't feel like absolutely amazing at that point, but that feeling that I always felt all the time of being so uncomfortable, and the only thing that would relieve that would be drugs and alcohol, for the first time, I finished the steps and I felt that feeling lifted without getting high. I made some amends that I swore, like, even when I started doing the steps, in my mind, like, I'm not going to make those amends. And I made some of those amends, and more weight was lifted. I got my first guy through all the way through his round of steps, you know, and I felt even better. And ever since then, it's just been like, my life has just been like this snowball effect, but not in a bad way. Just like better and better and better. And like, it's not to say that bad shit doesn't happen in that. It's just that my attitude about it has changed like so much. My perspective on life has changed so much. When I finished the steps, like I did, I kind of expected like, yeah, okay, you do AA, you stay sober, you know? But what I didn't anticipate was all the other things I was going to learn as a result from being in AA and working the steps. Because when I was growing up, like I conceptually understood these things about like honesty and you know, people relying on you, and being a good brother or being a good student or being a good worker or following through or keeping your word. I understood all those things, but I just had no, I couldn't live up to them at all. I had no experience with living up to them. And as I worked the steps again, And I started to like get more than physical sobriety. I started to get emotional sobriety, and like consistently week after week meeting with a sponsor at the same time and doing my work and all this stuff and asking questions. Like, I learned how to be a good student. I learned how to be a good worker. I learned how to be accountable. And, you know, people asked me to do things in AA that I didn't want to do, what like service or whatever, and I started to learn how to be accountable. I just like, I had no idea the things, like the person I was going to grow up to be in AA. And at like 2 years, I was kind of like stuck at this place where I had been raised at this one type of AA, and I thought like that was the right way, you know. And then someone said to me like the shortest little line one day, they're like, not everyone's experience with AA is the same as yours. It was like and it's been so much more enjoyable ever since then, you know. Like, I see, oh, you work the steps that way, awesome, I can't wait to do it that way, I've done it this way and this way, you know. And man, I like, when I got sober, I had exactly zero keys, you know? No keys for anything. Like, no one trusted me. No one wanted me to have access to their things. And now I have this huge, I mean, it's too many keys for my pocket, you know? It's just like, I have my shop keys, house keys, family's house keys, Ed's shop keys. It's just like, I have, it's ridiculous. Like, people trust me now because I'm a trustworthy person, you know? And I feel like, man, if they only knew who I was, but they do know who I was, you know? They just know who I am now. So, yeah, I can't say enough about working the steps. I hope that I don't ever stop. I just, every time I finish, I do it again. I know that's not everyone's experience, but every time I've gone through it, I've learned something new, you know? And I really like that about AA. So I'm so grateful to be here today and to be able to speak in front of this meeting. Thank you.